Well, we found out what was wrong with Wolf not being able to shoot worth a damn.
What was wrong with him, Charlie?
He's scared of guns. Pistols, especially.
Good God. Charlie, there's about 100 people in Gibson with one thought in mind. To kill the Reno kid. Real name Parnell, now called Wolf. He's a school teacher, Charlie, not a gunfighter. The poor man is a walking target.
Yeah, but we come up with something, Smoke. Looky here.
Charlie Starr held up the ugliest and most awesome-looking rig that Smoke had ever seen.
What in God's name?
The old gunfighters had taken two double-barreled shotguns and sawed the barrels down to about 10 inches long. Then they had fashioned a pistol-type butt for the terrible weapons.
Those things would break a man's arm.
Not Wolf's arm. For a school teacher, he's pretty damn strong. And he's just as fast with these here things as he is with a pistol.
So that's all the booming I've been hearing.
You damn right, man. That Wolf is plumb dandy with these here things. He got them loaded up with rusty nails and ball bearings and raggedy little old rocks and the like. We done loaded up near about a case of them shells for him. He ready to go hunting him a rep.
Pistol. Wolf Parnell doesn't want a rep.
You ain't seen much of him for a week, Smoke. You gonna be astonished at the change. Come on.
Smoke was more than astonished. He didn't even recognize the man. Parnell had grown a mustache, and that had completely changed his appearance. He was also dressed all in black from his hat down to his polished boots. He looked very capable and very tough.
I gotta see him draw and cock and fire these hand cannons.
With pleasure, cousin.
You watch this.
Cord and several others gathered around, and Pistol and Silver Jim rolled several full water barrels out and backed away.
They's a face in you, Wolf. Watch her now. Watch the eyes. That'll give him away every time.
Parnell tensed, his hands hovering over the butts of the terrible weapons.
They's about ready to make their play. You gotta take out the man on your left first. He's the bad one. Now!
Parnell's right hand dipped and his left hand came across to support the sawed-off shotgun. Parnell dropped the first sawed-off and drew the left-hand shotgun.
Holy shit. I'm impressed. That was about as fast as anybody I've ever seen, considering the size of those things.
I'm proud of you, brother.
I love you, Wolf.
Hard Rock looked close at Parnell and shook his head.
First time I ever seen a wolf blush.
A few days later, Cord, Smoke, Parnell, Lujan, Beans, Dell, Charlie, and Ring rode into Gibson. A wagon rattled along behind him to carry the supplies back. Cal at the reins.
Whoa!
Yeah, whoa.
The once tiny and sleepy little town was now a full 3 blocks long and several blocks deep on either side. Many of the new stores were no more than knocked-together sideboards with canvas tops, but it was still a pretty damn impressive sight.
That town ain't filled with nothing but trash. Hurdy-gurdy girls, tin-horn hustlers and pimps, two-bit gunslingers, slick-fingered gamblers and the like. It's dying while it seems to be growing. As soon as this war is settled one way or the other, 99% of them down yonder will pull up stakes and haul their ashes. Town will be right back where it started from.
How about the 1% that will stay?
Good point. Wolf, you stay on top of things down yonder in that town. There's gonna be a bunch of people eyeballing every move you make. You're gonna get called out. Bet on it.
I am aware of that. I'm ready to confront whatever comes my way.
Me and you, Wolf, we'll have a cool beer in one of them new saloons. Check things out.
I detest the taste of beer. However, I might have a sarsaparilla.
You go sashaying up in a saloon in the middle of a bunch of hard cases and order soda pop, Wolf, you better be ready for trouble, because it's sure gonna be coming at you.
I am aware of that, too.
Come on, let's go.
The men rode slowly toward the crowded street of the West's newest boom town. But the news of their arrival spread as quickly as a prairie fire across dry grass, and in less than a minute, the wide street had emptied. No one wanted to be caught in the middle of a gunfight, and that was something that everybody knew might be, hell, probably was, only a careless word away. As the men rode past the Pussycat, Charlie cut his flint-hard eyes to a stranger sitting on the boardwalk, his chair tilted back. They looked at each other. Charlie smiled faintly.
I'll be visiting Hilda, but I'll come immediately if there is trouble.
Cord, Dell, and Cal took a look at the new general store.
Which one of those new joints are you boys gonna try?
How about Harriet's house? That sounds quite congenial.
Oh, I'm sure it will be. Harriet always runs a stable out back.
Well, then that will be a convenient place for our horses.
A stable of women, Wolf. For hire.
You mean ladies who sell their...
That's right, Wolf.
Smoke dismounted and almost bumped into a small man wearing a derby hat and a checkered vest. The man's head struck Smoke about chest high.
Excuse me, sir. Horace Mulrooney's the name, sir. Owner and editor of the Gibson Express. And you would be Smoke Jensen, sir.
That's right.
Horace Mulrooney stuck out his hand and Smoke took it, quickly noticing that the hand was hard and calloused. He cut his eyes for just a flash and saw that the stocky man's hands were thick with calluses around the knuckles. He was not very tall, but he was built like a boxcar. Something silently told him that Horace would be hard to handle.
And your friends, Mr. Jensen, sir?
That's Charlie Starr, Lou Hahn, the Moab Kid, and Parnell Jensen.
Ah, the Reno Kid.
I am not the Reno Kid.
His name's Wolf. Get at least one thing right, newspaper man.
Excuse if I jot a few notes down. That is quite an unusual affair strapped around your waist, Reno. Or Wolf.
I would hardly call two sawed-off shotguns an affair, Mr. Mulrooney. But since this is no time to be discussing proper English usage, I will let your misunderstanding of grammar be excused. For now.
You sound like a schoolteacher, Wolf.
I am.
Oh. Are you gentlemen going to have a taste in Miss Harriet's saloon?
We was planning on it. The sooner the better. All this palavering is making me thirsty.
Do you mind if I join you, sir?
Could we stop you?
Of course not. After you, Mr. Starr.
Mulrooney waved at a man toting a bulky box camera, and the man came at a trot. Horace grinned at the gunfighters.
One never knows when a picture might be available, sirs. I like to record events for posterity.
Mm-hmm.
As Charlie went for the saloon, the stranger left his chair in front of the Pussycat and walked toward him. Charlie had a hunch the stranger was thinking about joining the game. He knew from experience that the man was a sucker for the underdog. The saloon was filled with hard cases, both real and imagined. Smoke's wise and knowing eyes immediately picked out the real gunslingers from the tin-horned punks looking for a reputation. Smoke knew a few of the hard cases in the room. Several from Dad Estes's gang were sitting at a table. A few that had left Cord Spread were there. A couple of Cat Jennings' bunch were present. They didn't worry Smoke as much as the young tinhorns who were sitting around the saloon, their guns all pearl-handled and fancy engraved and tied down low. The known and experienced gun handlers had stiffened when their eyes touched the awesome rig belted around Parnell's waist. Nobody in their right mind wanted to tangle with a sawed-off shotgun, since a buckshot load at close range would literally tear a man in two. Even if a man could get led into the shotgun toter first, odds were, unless the bullet struck him in the brain or the heart, he could still pull a trigger.
Beer.
Tequila.
Whiskey.
The same.
I'll have a beer. Sarsaparilla.
Hey, what's the matter with you, Slick? Can't you handle a real man's drink?
Parnell turned and looked the young man in the eyes.
Does your mother know where you are, Junior?
The punk's eyes narrowed, and he opened his mouth to retort. Just then, the stranger came in. Now, there is an aura about really bad men. And in the West, a bad man was not necessarily an outlaw. He was just a bad man to fool with. The stranger walked between the punk and Parnell, his hands hanging loosely at his side. He wore one gun, a classic Peacemaker 45, 7.5-inch barrel. It was tied down. The man looked to be in his mid to late 30s, deeply tanned and very sure of himself. He glanced at Parnell's drink, and a very slight smile creased his lips. Walking to Charlie's side, he motioned to the barkeep.
A sarsaparilla, please.
Another sissy, Johnny. You reckon they gonna kiss each other?
I wouldn't be surprised.
The barkeep served up the stranger's drink and backed away to the far end of the bar. When they had entered, the bar had been full. Now, only 7 of them remained at the long bar. The stranger lifted his bottle to Charlie Starr.
A toast to your good health.
To your health.
Hey, old man, you with them wore-out jeans on.
You talking to me, boy?
I ain't no boy.
No, I reckon you ain't. Strapping on them guns makes you a man. A loud mouth who ain't dry behind the ears yet. And if you keep flapping them lips at me, you ain't never gonna be dry behind your dirty ears.
Just who the hell you think you are, old man?
I'm Charlie Starr.
The words had all the impact of a hard slap across Johnny's face. His mouth dropped open. He closed it and swallowed hard a couple of times. Beads of sweat formed on his forehead.
Now, sit down and shut your goddamn mouth or make your play, punk.
The experienced gun handlers there had noticed first off that when the men at the bar had entered, they had the leather thongs off their hammers.
You can't talk to me like that.
I just did, boy.
Johnny abruptly sat down. He tried to pick up his beer mug, but his hand was shaking so badly he spilled some of it on the tabletop. Charlie turned his back to the mouthy punk and picked up his shot glass in his left hand.
Been a long time, Charlie.
Your bat's 10 years, I reckon. You just passing through?
I was. I decided to stay.
What name you going by nowadays?
Same name that got hung on me 17, 18 years ago.
And what name is that, sir?
The stranger turned around, facing the crowd of punks and tin horns, loudmouths and barflies, hurdy-gurdy girls, gamblers, and gunfighters. He let his eyes drift around the room.
I never did like a lopsided fight, Charlie. You recall that, I suppose.
I allow as how I do. I remember the time me and you stood up to a whole room filled to the rafters with trash and cleaned it out. That there was a right good fight.
Yeah, I got my other gun and my kit over to the rooming house. Reckon I best go on over and get it and strap it on. Looks like we got some house cleaning to do.
I couldn't agree more.
Hey, asshole. That's what I think about you, stranger.
How rude.
Hey, sissy pants. I think I'll just kill you. Because I don't believe that you're the Reno kid.
He's not. I am.
Now, Charlie Starr and them old gray-headed he-cougars with him was bad enough. Add the Moab kid and Luhan to the mixture, and he was stirring nitro too fast with a flat stick. Smoke Jensen was the fastest gun in the West. And now here came the real Reno kid, and there goes anybody with a lick of sense. The gun hand facing Parnell didn't back down.
Oh, you gonna fight Sissy Pants' battle for him, Reno?
Nope.
You ready to die, Sissy Pants?
Oh, I think not. But I do have a question.
Go ahead and ask it.
What is your name?
Reedon. What's it to you?
I just wondered what to have carved on the marker over your grave.
Damn your eyes.
Tow!
The ball bearings and rusty nails and ragged rocks hit the gun hand in the belly and lifted him off his boots while the charge was tearing him apart. He landed on a table several feet away from where he'd been standing, smearing the tabletop with crimson and collapsing the table. He had never even cleared leather. Parnell, seeing that no one was gonna immediately take up the fight, but sensing that was only seconds away, broke open the shotgun pistol and tossed aside the empty, loading it up full. He snapped it shut and eared back both hammers. The gun hand Smoke had first seen at the little store down on the boulder stood up. He grabbed for his gun. Dunlap fell, a hole in his chest delivered courtesy of Smoke Jensen. The now familiar Ghost Rider came galloping up, took a look around, and grinned in a macabre fashion. He decided to stick around. Things are pretty lively in this little town. The Ghost Rider put a bony hand on another man's shoulder, and half of the men in the barroom grabbed for iron. Mulrooney jumped behind the bar and landed on top of the barkeep, who was already on the floor. He'd been a bartender in too many western towns not to know where the safest place was. Parnell's shotgun pistol knocked two gunnies to the floor. Johnny picked that time to make his move. Just as he was reaching for his guns, Parnell stepped the distance as he was reversing the weapon. No! Reno Kid was crouched by the bar, coolly and carefully picking his shots. A bullet took Charlie Starr in the shoulder and slammed him against the bar. He kept on banging. The Moab Kid took a round in the leg and the leg buckled under him, dropping him to the floor, his face twisted in pain. But it was Parnell who was dishing out the most death and destruction. The Gunnies and Tin Horns gave it up, one by one raising their hands in the air. Cord, Dell, Ring, and Cal stepped through the bat wings, pistols drawn and cocked. Ring with his double-barrel express gun.
Get Doc a dare, Cal.
Luhan helped Charlie to a chair. The front of the old gunslinger's shirt was soaked with blood.
My cousin, but for a few moments, that was quite exhilarating.
Yeah, it was, Parnell. I'll stand shoulder to shoulder with you anytime, cuz.
Mulrooney had crawled from behind the bar and waved his photographer in. The man set up his bulky equipment and sprinkled the powder in the flash pan.
Smile, everyone!
Beans had cut his jeans open to inspect the wound, and it was a bad one.
Damn! Leg's busted. Looks like I'm out of it.
The photographer was busy taking in the bloody sprawl of bodies and the line of gunhawks standing against the wall, their hands in the air, their weapons piled on a table. While Doc Adair tended to Charlie and Beans, Smoke faced the surrendered gun handlers. His eyes were as cold as chips of ice.
You're out of it. Get on your horses and ride. If I see any of you in this area again, I'll kill you. No questions asked. I'll just shoot you. And no, you don't pack your trunk. You don't get your guns. You don't draw your pay. You ride. Now move!
They needed no further instructions. A woman stepped out of a back room, eyes bugging out with anger.
Hey, you tore up my place!
Howdy, Harriet. Right nice to see you again.
Oh, Jesus Christ. You! I might have known it'd be you, Moab.
Her eyes flicked to the Reno Kid.
You back gun handling, Reno?
I reckon.
Harriet walked over to Smoke, took in his rugged good looks and heavy musculature.
Remember me, big boy?
I remember you, Harriet. You were one of the smart ones who left Fontana early.
Did you kill Tilden Franklin?
I sure did.
Man ever deserved killing that one did. You gonna run me out of Gibson?
I didn't run you out of Fontana, Harriet.
For a fact? See you around, baby.
She turned to the bartender.
Clean up this mess, Big Willie. I'm going out for a breath of fresh.
Smoke Beans here can't sit a saddle, and I'd rather he didn't for a few days.
Oh, hell.
I'll put some hay in the wagon.
The Undertaker and his pal, both of them trying very hard to keep from smiling, entered the saloon and walked among the dead and dying, pausing at each body to go through the pockets.
Hey, does it get my guns back?
Parnell looked at Smoke. Smoke looked at the young troublemaker on the floor.
You still alive? Give him to the punk. He'd just find some more. One of us is going to have to kill him sooner or later.
What a story this'll make. I shall dispatch it immediately to New York City.
Do try to be grammatically correct.
Sandy had hollered and bawled and carried on something fierce when she saw Beans in the back of the wagon. But then she brightened up considerably when she realized he'd be laid up for several weeks and she could nurse him. Reno had checked out of his room and rode back to the Circle Double C with the men. He had strapped on his other peacemaker and was in the fight to the finish. Parnell had taken a slight bullet burn on his left arm, but the way Rita acted, a person would have thought he'd been riddled with bullets. She insisted on spoon-feeding him some hot soup she fixed, just for him. Something good did come out of the gunfight inside Harriet's saloon. Many of the hangers-on decided to pull out. The fight was getting too hot for many of the tinhorn and would-be gunfighters. They'd go back to their daddy's farms and be content to milk the cows and gather the eggs, their guns hanging on a peg. But it did leave the true hard cases, many of them on no one's payroll. Like buzzards, they were waiting to see the outcome and perhaps pick up a few crumbs of the pie. Crime had increased in Gibson, with footpadders and petty thieves plying their trade on the unsuspecting men and women who had to venture out after dark. And the hard cases were getting surly and hard to handle. They wanted action. There were several minor run-ins among the gunhawks, provoked by recklessness and restlessness and booze and the urge to kill and destroy. The leaders of the gangs had to step in and calm the situation, reminding the outlaws that their fight was not with each other, but with the Double Circle C. Lodi, for one, was getting pretty damn tired of it.
God damn it! Let's just make war on them right now!
Dad Estes and Jason Bright looked at each other and shrugged their shoulders. Dad Estes jerked his head toward the boardwalk, and the men stomped outside to stand in the night. Dad Estes, Cat Jennings, Jason Bright, and Lanny Ball all stood outside. The four men had grown to be the unofficial leaders of these outlaws.
We gotta use them or lose them. My boys ain't gonna stand around here much longer twiddling their thumbs.
So you got some sort of plan, Dad?
As a matter of fact, Lanny, I do. We hit him tonight.
What does Dooley have to say about that?
I ain't disgusted with him. Look here, we could turn this into a right nice town. And if we was all big landowners, why, we'd also own the sheriff and deputies and the like.
We got to kill Dooley and him first.
Dad Estes took out an ornate pocket watch and clicked it open.
Well, boys, I got some people doing that little thing in just about an hour.
Dooley Hanks came awake, keeping his eyes closed. The slight creaking of the hall door had woken him up. He had drank himself to sleep, sitting in the big chair just inside the living room. Now wide awake, he sat very still in the darkness and opened his eyes.
I told you to oil that door, bud.
Shut your mouth, sonny. The old fool was probably so drunked up when he went to bed, a shotgun blast couldn't wake him up.
Shotgun blast is what we're gonna give him.
Cold, insane fury washed over the father as he froze still in his chair. His sons were here to kill him. If he'd had a gun in his hand, he'd have killed all three of them there right this minute. But his gun belt was hanging on the peg in the hall.
Stay here and keep watch, Conrad. Me and Bud, we'll do the deed.
I don't want to keep no watch. I want to see when the buckshot hits him. And what the hell's I going to be watching for anyway? There ain't nobody here but us. The others is all back in town.
Do what I tell you to do.
Dooley carefully drew his feet up under the chair, hiding him from view should any of his traitorous offspring look into the living room. Dooley remembered he hadn't made up his bed from the past night. The pillows and covers must have fooled the boys into thinking their dad was lying in bed.
Woo-hoo-hoo! I got the old nut brain! Woo-hoo-hoo! The ranch is ours! Let's go join the other boys and finish the deed! Yahoo!
The deed? What deed?
Dooley moved to the window and watched as his bastard sons galloped out of sight.
Oh, that damn cord put him up to this. That son of a bitch.
Dooley yanked his gun belt from the peg and slung it around his waist. He ran to the kitchen and filled a gunny bag with cans of food, a side of bacon, and some hard tack. He took a big canteen and filled that at the kitchen pump. Then he ran to the study, quickly opened his safe, stuffing a money belt full of cash money he'd just received from the army cattle buyer. He belted the money bag around his middle. In his bedroom, he rolled up some clothes and a blanket. He headed straight for a nearby horse. It was his favorite horse, his best horse. He took off into the timber of the Little Belt Mountains. He knew when his boys came back, they'd find that what they'd shot was only a bed, and they'd come looking to kill their pa. Dooley could sleep in the saddle, and his horse would never falter. The horse also knew where Dooley was going just as soon as Dooley guided the way toward the old engine trail that wound in a circuitous route to the base of Old Baldy, the highest peak in the Little Belt, which ran for some 40 miles from the southeast of Great Falls to the Mussel Shell. Dooley and his horse had come here often just to think, to let the hate fester over the past few years.
God damn you, Cord. You helped take my woman from me, and now you done turned my sons against me. I'm gonna kill every one of you. Every stinking one of you.
Here they come!
The shout from Smoke came only minutes before the mass of riders entered the Circle Double C Ranch complex. But it was enough to roust everybody out of bed.
Wolf, help me close to that there window. I'll take it from there. I can shoot just as good with my left hand as I can with my right.
Beans turned to Sandy.
Well, get some help and shove my bed to that window and hand me my rifle. Then you and Rita get on the floor. All right, that's good.
The girls then reached for their own rifles.
Can't you women take orders?
We stand by our men. Now shut up and shoot.
Yes, dear.
Whoa!
Before Beans could sight the rider in, Parnell's sawed-off blaster was already up.
Give him hell, baby!
Curb that vulgar tongue, woman!
Yes, dear.
In the bunkhouse, Ring was proven deadly with a rifle.
What the? Hell, it's jam.
Ring turned just as a man was crawling in through a rear window.
Hey! Now, guess I'll make do with my Colts.
Ring moved to the window. Outside, Smoke and the Reno Kid had grabbed up rifles and bandoliers of ammunition and raced to the barn and corral, knowing that if the outlaws succeeded in stampeding their horses, they were doomed. Reno climbed into the loft with Jake and Courtney. Fitz, Willie, and Old Cook stayed below, while Smoke and Gage remained outside, behind watering troughs by the corral. The outlaw Hartley, who was wanted for murder down in the Oklahoma Nations, tried to rope the corral gates and bring them down. Smoke leveled his pistol.
Drop! Damn it!
Smoke ran straight for the man on horseback.
Hey!
Smoke jerked Hartley's pistol from leather and spun it around. Hartley lay still in the dirt, knocked out with his own gun. Smoke stuck both of Hartley's pistols behind his belt and reloaded his own .44s.
Let's see how these men like the fight taken to them.
Smoke charged right into the middle of the confused and dust-filled fray. He locked eyes with the young punk gunslick Twain.
Hey! This one!
Twain fell from the saddle and the butt of his boots caught in the stirrup. Twain's horse bolted. Twain was dragged across the yard. His horse leapt over a tree stump. Cat Jennings rammed his big gelding into Smoke's horse. Rolling away from the hooves of the panicked horse, Smoke jumped behind a startled outlaw and stuck a pistol in the man's side. Smoke shoved the body out of the saddle and took another horse. Smoke turned the horse right around, trying to get a shot at Cat. But the man was as elusive and quick as his name implied, fading into the milling confusion, churning dust.
Back! Back! Fall back and surround the place!
Smoke turned toward Lanny Ball's cry. Jumping off his horse, Smoke rolled behind a tree in the front yard of the main house, and with a .44 in each hand, emptied the guns into the backs of the fast-retreating outlaw. Smoke ran to the house. Jumping onto the front porch, he saw a body draped over the porch railing. On the other side of the porch, Holman was sprawled, a bloody hole in his forehead.
Oh, God damn.
Cord stepped out onto the porch. His face was grim as he looked at the bodies.
Been with me a long time. Good hands. Loyal to the end.
Man can't ask for a better epitaph. Cord, you take the barn. I'll run to the bunkhouse. Tell the men to fortify their positions and fill up every canteen and bucket they can find.
Smoke cut his eyes as Liz and Alice came onto the porch.
You ladies start cooking. The men are going to need food and lots of it. We might be pinned down here for days.
I'll have some boys gather up all the guns and ammo from the dead. Pass them around.
Cord stepped off the porch and trotted into the night.
Larry!
A hand turned.
Get the horses out of the corral and into the barn. Find as much scrap lumber as you can and fortify their stalls against stray lead.
The cowboy nodded and ran toward the corral. Smoke and Parnell carried the bodies of Holman and the other hand away from the house, placing them under a tree. The shade would help as the sun came up. The men covered them with blankets and secured the edges with rocks.
Shit! Down! Everybody, get down!
Snipers from out in the darkness began sending random rounds into the house and the outbuildings, forcing everyone to seek shelter and stay low.
This is going to be very unpleasant.
Wait until the sun comes up and the temperature starts rising. Our only hope is that cloud buildup I'm seeing. If it starts raining, I plan on heading into the timber and doing some headhunting. The rain will cover any sound.
Do you think prayer would help?
It sure as hell wouldn't hurt.
There were 7 dead outlaws, and all of them knew that at least that many more had been wounded. Some of them were hard hit and wouldn't live. Among their own, Corgill and Old Pat had been wounded. Their wounds were painful, but not serious. They could still use a gun, but with difficulty. Smoke and Cord got together just after first light and talked it out, tallying it up. They were badly outnumbered, facing perhaps 100 or more experienced gun handlers, and the defender's position was not the best. They had plenty of food and water and ammunition, but all knew if the outlaws decided to lie back and snipe, eventually the bullets would seek them out one by one. The house was the safest place, the lower floor being built mostly of stone. The bunkhouse was also built of stone. The wounded had been moved from the upstairs to the lower floor. Beans, with his leg in a cast, could cover one window. Charlie Starr, the old war horse, scoffed at his wound and got dressed, his right arm in a sling, but with both guns strapped around his lean waist.
Charlie, you sure you're okay?
You kidding? I've hurt myself worse than this by falling out of bed.
Parnell had gathered up a half a dozen shotguns and loaded them up full, placing them near his position. The women had loaded up rifles and belted pistols around their waists. Silver Jim damn near had a seizure when he ran from the bunkhouse to the main house and put his eyes on the women, all of them dressed in men's breeches, stomping around in boots, 6 guns strapped around their waists. He opened his mouth and closed it a half a dozen times before he could even manage to speak. Shielding his eyes from the sight of the women all dressed up like men with their charms all poked out every which way, he turned his beet-red face to Cord and finally found his voice.
Can't you do something about that? It's plumb indecent.
I tried. My wife told me that if we had to make a run for it, it'd be easier to sit in a saddle dressed like this.
A stride?
I reckon.
Lord have mercy. Things keep going on like this, women will be getting the vote before it's over.
Probably.
Parnell kept a good eye on Rita. There was something to be said about jeans, but he kept that thought to himself. The old gunfighter walked away. He met Charlie in the hall.
Charlie, what's the matter? That bed get too much for you?
About to worry me to death. Laying in there under the covers with nothing on but a nightgown and women coming and going without no warning. More than a body can stand.
Where are you fixing on shooting from?
I best stay here with these folks. Come tonight, they'll be creeping in on us.
Gonna rain in about an hour. My bones is talking to me.
Then Smoke is gonna be going headhunting. Preacher taught him well. He'll take out a bunch.
You reckon some of us ought to go with him?
Nope. You know Smoke. He likes to lone wolf it.
He's been digging in his war bag. He's all dressed up in buckskin, right down to his moccasins. He's sitting on a bunk, sharpening his knife when I left.
Them gun handlers is gonna pay in blood this afternoon. Bet on that, old boss.
Wait, who's gonna pay in blood?
Hey, Cord. The Mavericks out yonder. Smoke's fixing to go looking for scalps come the rain.
Sounds dangerous to me.
Oh, it will be. For them out there.
Sure enough, the sky darkened and lightning began dancing around the high mountains of the Little Belt. With his rifle slung over his shoulder with a strap, hanging barrel down, and his buckskin shirt covering his six guns and a long-bladed bowie knife sheath, Smoke slipped out into the rain on moccasin-clad feet. He kept low to the ground, utilizing every bit of natural cover he came to. He moved swiftly but carefully and made the timber and brush without drawing a shot. Once in the brush, he paused, studying every area in his field of vision before moving out. He shifted his long-bladed knife to just behind his right-hand 44.
I sure want me a crack at that Sandy McCorkle.
Smoke froze still as a mighty oak. Clad in buckskins with the timber dark and gloomy as twilight, Smoke would be hard to spot unless he was right on top of a man. Unfortunately, he just about was.
We'll use all them pretty gals before we kill them. You see anything moving down yonder?
Nah. They all shut up in the buildings.
I'll be back, Tabor. I gotta go take a shit. Must have been something I had to.
Slowly, Smoke sank down behind a bush as a red and white checkered shirt stood and began moving toward him. The pair sounded like Tabor and Park. When Park passed the bush, Smoke rose up, his buoy in his right hand. He grabbed Park's body and laid it on the ground. Tabor didn't seem to notice. Smoke quickly cut off Park's head and placed it in a gunny bag he tucked behind his belt. Then he went looking for Tabor. Circling around to come in behind the Oklahoma outlaw, Smoke laid his bloody bottom sack down on a rock and engined up to Tabor, coming in slowly and making no sound. Tabor never knew what happened. Another head went in the sack. Smoke moved on through the rain and the spots of fog that clung low to the ground, swirling around his moccasined feet, as silent as his own footsteps. Smoke immediately bellied on the ground. The rifles weren't aimed at Smoke, only at the house. Smoke took the moment to add his 44 to the man-made thunder. The surviving man immediately let down his rifle and looked around. He had an angry look on his face, sure that someone on his side was getting careless. Smoke didn't take time to steal their heads. The important part was that blood had been spilled. Smoke worked his way back into the timber, climbing up the hill as he moved. Behind a thick stand of timber, he paused for a break and squatted down, a bloody sack beside him. He hadn't made his mind up yet what to do with the heads, but an idea was forming. He ate a biscuit and cupped his hands for a drink of rainwater. He did not have 1 ounce of remorse or regret for what he was doing. He knew only too well that to fight the lawless, one must get down and wallow in the muck and the crud and the filth with them, using the same tactics or worse that they would use against an innocent. To win a battle, one must understand the enemy. Rested, Smoke moved out, staying above the positions of the outlaws. He circled wide, wanting to hit them in widely separated spots, wanting them to know they had not been alone and had been attacked by someone who had walked among them with the stealth of a ghost.
Fire!
Smoke immediately focused on the lone gunman closest to him. The outlaw slumped forward, his rifle sliding from lifeless hands, a bloody hole in the man's back. Smoke slipped down to the man's position and left the bloody bag of heads by the dead man's side. He added his ammunition to that he'd gathered from the others, and then moved on. He'd planned on sticking the heads up on poles, but decided this way would be just as effective. He continued his circling, which would eventually bring him out on the north end of the ranch complex. He caught just a glimpse of the Hanks boys. Billy and Dan, he started working his way to their position.
I'm getting bored, guys.
Well, this ain't nearly as fun as killing Dad.
Hey, you don't even know how fun it was. Didn't even know what hit him. Probably getting real ripe laying in bed like that.
Well, hey, don't forget, running the whole town's gonna be a whole lot of fun.
Yeah, bud. Once this is over, there ain't gonna never be a moment that ain't fun. Woo-hoo!
Smoke looked around. There were several outlaws close by. There was no way he could kill them all without being spotted. He broke off his head hunting and began making his way back to the ranch. But the news was true, and he had no reason to doubt it, for the Hank boys were as goofy as their father. That meant that part of the outlaws' plans had been accomplished, and everyone at the Circle Double C had to die for the outlaws' planned takeover to succeed. Smoke moved quickly, always staying in the brush and timber.
Oh, shit! Cat! Jason! Get over here quick!
Smoke knew that the bag of heads had just been found. Either that or the headless bodies of the outlaws. Smoke began moving cautiously, for at this point, he was open to fire from either side. He got closer to the house and stopped. Smoke ran the last few hundred feet, zigging and zagging to offer a hard target. But if the outlaws saw him, they didn't fire. Probably they were too busy searching the ridges for the unknown headhunter. Smoke reached the back porch.
Smoke, you okay?
Yeah, Liz. Got some news about your husband. I'll tell you all inside.
Well, come on in and warm up. We got you a change of clothes.
Thanks.
Alice brewed up some coffee while Smoke got changed as an audience gathered. Whatever the news was, it couldn't be good.
Here you are, Smoke.
Thanks. Oh.
What's this about Dooley?
I overheard your sons talking about it, Liz. They said they killed him last night. They shot him in his own bed.
Killed their own father? Good God, Liz, are...
I'm okay. Those were no sons of mine. Dooley made them sick, and they paid him right back.
But this means we, all of us, have to die if their plans are to succeed.
The women looked at each other. They knew that for them, it would not be a quick bullet. They'd be used, and used badly until the outlaws tired of them. Only then would death bring relief.
I see Reno coming at a run. He's been out eyeballing the situation close to home.
The gunfighter was as soaked as Smoke had been. The women chewed him into a room and handed him towels and dry clothing. When he emerged, they had coffee waiting for him.
Thank you, ladies. They blocked off the road leading south and have men waiting in the passes. They have so many men, there was no problem to seal us off. Any bust out is going to be difficult, if not downright impossible.
And walking out will be tough with the wounded. But if we stay here, they'll eventually overrun us by their number. Or they'll burn the building down around us. Beans is going to have to be carried out of here. Pat and Corgill can walk out with him. I'm going to suggest that the women leave with them. Parnell, you and Gage, Dell, and Bernie will spell each other with the litter. Me and Reno will make the litter right now. Charlie, you're going to be with the foot party. You people pack some food and blankets, make a light backpack, and get ready to move out at dark. Let's do it.
I'll be damned if I go with the foot party. You think because of this silly arm I can't...
Charlie, they need you. They need your experience in guiding them, and they need your gun.
Well, if you put it that way. All right, but I hate like hell to miss out on this here fight.
Damned old rooster with a busted wing. You look after them folks now. You hear me, old coot?
I've told them to head for the old Fletcher gold mine in the Big Belt. It's been abandoned for years when we cache supplies up there. From there, they can angle back east and make it into Gibson. But it's going to be a long, hard haul for them all.
You just get me in a saddle. I ain't never seen the day I couldn't sit on a hurricane deck.
Just lay back and enjoy the trip. Amigo, you injure thy leg again, and you'll be a cripple for the rest of your life. He's better this way, and you know it.
Bean seemed to shut up about it and accept his fate. Smoke pulled Cord to one side.
How do you feel about leaving your ranch to those jackals out there on the ridge?
I don't like it, but I think it's gonna happen. See, if my plan agrees with yours, we give them walking out a full 24 hours. Then we saddle up, put sacks on the horses' hooves, and lead them out a ways. Then we all hit one spot just as hard as we can.
That's it. We'll get the foot party moving just after dark and pray that the rain doesn't let up. They're going to be wet and cold and miserable, but I think they've got more of a chance out there than staying here.
Right. I'll pass word to the hands. You sure you don't want a diversion?
No. That would be a sure tip-off that we're up to something. Anyway, I think they'll hit us at full dark. That'll be enough.
The afternoon wore on with only a few shots being exchanged from each side. Those in the house knew that the outlaws would be cold, soaking wet, miserable, and that their patience would be growing thin with each sodden hour that passed. And those in the ranch compound also knew, some more than others, that after finding the sack of bloody heads and several more of their kind shot to death, most of the outlaws would be wanting revenge in the worst sort of way, for they would know it had been Smoke stalking them silently on the ridges. Smoke looked out into the gray, dripping afternoon. 24 hours. They had to hold out for 24 hours. Reno seemed to read his thoughts.
We'll hold, Smoke. Some of them might breach the house, but it'll be a death trap for them. One thing in our favor, they damn sure can't burn the place down. At least not this night.
From the outside. A couple of torches tossed inside, though.
Aw, damn, you're right. I've got some lumber out in the shed. Rock, Troy, you boys fetch the lumber while we get some nails and hammers. We'll board up windows we're not shooting from. On both levels of the house. I'll get to ripping down the drapes. Best not to have so much flammable stuff lying around.
As the outlaws figured out what was going on in the house, they started picking up the gunfire. Once those windows not being used as shooters' positions were boarded up, Smoke went to find Faye. He put his arm around her shoulders and kissed her cheek.
I'm heading back outside, Faye.
He looked at the other women.
You ladies watch your step this night. We'll see you all in a couple of days.
Shook hands with the men who were leaving that night.
You boys enjoy your stroll. As soon as it gets full dark, take off. Good luck.
Smoke walked back into the living room, leaving Cord to say his goodbyes to wife and daughter.
Reno, I'm going to pull Ring and Hard Rock, Silver Jim and Pistol in the house, with you and Cord and the boys. The rest of us will be in the bunkhouse in the barn. It'll be dark shortly. I'm heading out yonder. The others will be showing up one at a time, about 5 minutes apart. Good luck tonight.
Luck to you, Smoke.
There was nothing left to say. The two famed gun handlers looked at each other, nodded their heads, and Smoke slipped out onto the porch. He knew the chances of his being seen from several hundred yards away were practically non-existent, but he stayed low from force of habit. Smoke darted off the porch into a tree in the yard, then over the fence, a foot race to the corral. Then, as he got set for the run to the bunkhouse, his instincts kicked in.
Die, you meddling bastard!
Smoke had felt the heat of that bullet as it passed his arm. The .44 was in his hand, pointing at the outlaw. It was Hardy. He took both slugs, one in the chest and the other in his throat. Hartley, with a knot plainly visible on his rain-slicked head, the hair matted down, leaned up against the corral rail and lifted his six-gun, savage all the way to the grave. Hartley's head ballooned from the impact of a slug fired from the bunkhouse. Smoke turned. Spring, the old farmhand, was holding the .44-40, its barrel smoking. Riflemen from the ridges and the hills opened up, not really sure what they were shooting at, but filling the air with lead anyway. Smoke lay where he was, as safe there as anywhere in the open expanse between the house and bunkhouse.
Thanks, Spring. Harley must have laid out there in the corral all covered up with hay since I conked him on the noggin last night.
Oh, hell. He was dead on his feet when I shot him. I just like some insurance in cases like that. Coffee?
Always.
Spring poured Smoke a cup of coffee and returned to his post by a window. Smoke drank the strong, hot brew and laid out the plans. One by one, the old gunfighters began leaving the bunkhouse, heading for the house. Ring was the last to stand in the door. He smiled at Smoke.
You always bring this much action with you when you journey, Smoke?
It sure seems like it.
The big man smiled and then slipped out into the rapidly darkening day, the rain still coming down in silver sheets.
You know, I got to thinking a while back, after Ring asked me how it was nobody come to our aid. Smoke, it's sometimes 2-3 weeks go by, don't none of us go to town. Ain't nobody coming out here. And even if they did come out, what could they do? Nothing, except get themselves killed. It'd take a full company army troops to rout those outlaws.
There had been no fire from the ridges, so the men had safely made the house. Darkness pushed aside the day. Those walking out would be leaving shortly, and they had a good chance of making it, for the move would not be one those on the ridges would be expecting. To try to bust out on horseback, yeah, but not by walking out. Not in this weather. When the wet darkness had covered the land for almost an hour, Smoke turned to Spring. He could just see him in the gloom of the bunkhouse.
I don't think they'll try us on horseback this night, Spring. They'll be coming in on foot.
And my guess is they're coming. You want to start shooting now, or let them come closer?
Let them come on. This rain makes for deceptive shooting. Open that door a bit.
Smoke saw a torch outside. Its flash a jumping flame in the windswept darkness. The torch bobbed as the carrier ran toward the house. Somebody from the house had caught the light. The torch stopped and fell to the soaked earth, slowly going out as its carrier died. All around the compound, muzzle flashes pocked the gloom, and the dampness kept the gun smoke low to the ground as an arid fog.
Smoke! The bunkhouse is on fire!
Don't worry about it. It's just a kerosene bomb. Rain will take care of it.
Sure enough, the flames were slow to spread, and those that did were quickly put out by the driving rain.
They're getting close. I'd say we can shoot now. Good shot, Spring.
Smoke saw a moving shadow out of the corner of his eyes and lifted his pistol. The shadow blended in with the night. Smoke lost it, but it was definitely moving toward the bunkhouse. It was difficult, if not impossible, to hear any suspicious sounds due to the hard fall and rain and the crash of gunfire. Smoke left the window and moved to the door of the bunkhouse, standing some 6 feet away from the door. Spring and two other hands kept their eyes to the front, occasionally firing at a dark running shape within their perimeter. Suddenly, the door slammed open.
Shoot!
Smoke's .44 roared and bucked in his hands. More men rushed into the bunkhouse, leaping over the bodies sprawled in the doorway. Smoke was rushed and knocked to the floor. He lost his left-hand gun, but jammed the muzzle of his right-hand gun into the belly of a man. Smoke rolled to the far wall. It was too damn close and dark to continue the firing, but men were all over him, swinging fists and gun barrels. Smoke matched him blow for blow. Smoke whipped out his knife and began slashing, feeling the warm flow of blood splatter his arm and face as the big blade took down man after man. Smoke slipped to one side and grabbed a fallen man's pistol. He listened close, keeping the edge of his vision trained on the entrance. He knew where Spring and the other two gun hands were, and anybody else moving in the bunkhouse would be trying to move quick. The light from the house flickered for a moment.
You hit, Smoke?
Just a scratch. You?
Oh, Jim Dandy, thank you.
Donnie, how about you? Donnie?
Let me check. He rolled 12.
Damn. What about Cal?
He's with me. Bullet in the arm. But we beat him back, Smoke.
Yeah. This time.
Smoke and his men had bought those walking out some time and distance. By this time, if they had not been discovered, they were clear. Clear, but facing a long, cold, wet, and slow march into the big belts. The house, the barn, and the bunkhouse were riddled with bullet holes. They'd lost two horses, having to destroy them after they'd been hit by stray bullets. In no cowboy likes to shoot a horse. The outlaws had slipped away as the rain died out and made their way back to the ridges overlooking the ranch. The moonlight cast its light upon the bodies of outlaws sprawled in death on the grounds. Those not dead, but only wounded, had been shown no mercy. After the initial attack had been beaten back, the outlaws had fired from the ridges for several hours, but they finally gave it up and settled down for some rest. The moonlight was both a blessing and a curse, because it would make their busting out a lot more difficult. Smoke ran to the house to confer with Cord.
Well, good to see you're alive.
Feels good, too. But it's only a matter of time. We gotta get going.
I figure just after sunset tomorrow. After the moon comes up, it'll be impossible.
All right. We'll head in the opposite direction of those walking out. We'll start out like we're trying to bust through the roadblock. Then we'll cut east toward the timber. That sound all right to you?
Suits me.
Dooley Hanks had changed his mind about heading farther into the mountains, turning around when he was about halfway to Old Baldy. He rode back to Gibson and stayed the night in one of the newly erected saloon rooms. At dawn of the second day of the attack on the Circle Double C, Dooley was standing in front of the newly opened stage offices, waiting for the station agent.
Morning! Heck of a rainstorm, huh? You here mighty early. You been waiting long?
Unlock the damn door.
Okie dokie, then. Come on in. What can I do you for?
Dooley plopped down his money belt.
Stash that in your big safe and give me a receipt for it.
Okie dokie.
The station agent did as requested.
Here's your receipt, and you have a cracking day now.
Okie dokie.
Dooley was suddenly feeling good. He had slept, bathed himself, shaved, and was completely free of the effects of alcohol. And he intended to remain that way. Nuts, but sober. He walked over to Hans's cafe to enjoy a good breakfast, the first good meal he would have had in days. Hans and Olga and Hilda eyeballed the man suspiciously.
Where is everybody?
I ain't got no idea. I ain't been down to the ranch for a while. I'll have the full breakfast.
Truly, Dooley didn't have any idea how long he'd been gone. 2 days or a week, time meant nothing to him anymore. He had only a few constant thoughts burning in his brain. To kill Cord McCorkle, and then turn his guns on his traitor sons and watch him die in the muddy street. And if he didn't soak up too much lead doing that, and he could find her, he wanted to shoot his wife. That was the sum total of all that was in Dooley Hank's head. After his breakfast, he paid for his meal and went outside. Dooley Hank sat in a chair on the boardwalk in front of the cafe. He could wait. He watched the town wake up, and the people start moving around. He rolled cigarettes, smoking them slowly, his eyes missing nothing. He watched as two very muddy and tired-looking riders rode slowly up the street, coming in from the north. Dooley stayed in the morning shadows, only a dark blur to those still in the sunlight. He slipped the thongs from the hammers of his guns. The two riders reined up and dismounted, looping the reins around the hitch rail and starting up the steps to Hans's. They stopped and stared in disbelief at the man standing in front of them.
Well, if it ain't my hired gun slicks, Hector and Rod. Morning, boys.
You supposed to be dead.
Well, I ain't, Hector, and I want some answers from you.
We ain't got no quarrel with you. All we want is some hot coffee.
You'll get hot lead, boy. Where the hell are my no-count sons?
They're...
Hector!
You better talk to me, pup, before I shoot off both your ears.
You ain't seen the day you can mash my draw, old man.
Dooley turned his gun toward Rod, the hammer jacked back.
Looks like I seen the day. Hallelujah! Now, my boys, where is he?
They teamed up with Jason and Lanny and Cat Jennings. I don't know where they is, honest.
Thank you, Rod. I can wait. They'll show up. Then I'll kill them. I'll kill them all.